Welcome into a daily editorial here on the KE Report. I am chatting with Mark Chandler, managing partner at Bannockburn Global Forex, also writes the Mark to Market blog that I will post below this interview. Mark, let's start off with kind of the main story of the week outside of simply crazy volatility. That is the yield picture, the bond market in the U.S. and around the world. But in the U.S. especially, we saw yields crashed this week with the 10-year touching below 1.5%. We even had a short-term, or we had a yield curve inversion on the 10-2 spread. Right now, we do have the 10-year just above 1.5%. It's 1.56%. But overall, the trend for yields continues to be lower, and now the Fed is way behind the markets in terms of rate cuts. What do you think about the picture we saw this week for bonds and the crashing in yields?
Yes, it's amazing to me the magnitude of the sell-off. And it still doesn't feel like it's fully over yet either, of course. We should be expecting in the coming weeks more disturbing news, I think. But here's, I think, the, ultimately what's happening is that the drop in interest rates, what precipitated it this week, was not so much what was going on in the U.S., but other things. That is weaker Chinese data, and Germany reported that their economy, that's the fourth largest in the world, contracted in Q2. And so this leaves us with this picture of what the central bank's going to do. But I thought that what makes the bond rally in the U.S. so much more impressive to me is that you look at we had two numbers, I thought, in recent days that should have helped put a floor underneath yields. One of them was our CPI. You look at not only was it a little bit firmer than expected, but you look at the last, one way economists look at it is 3 months annualized. Our core rate, 3 month annualized pace, 2.8%. Fastest in about 18 months or 2 years. And then a few days later, we had retail sales. And not only, the U.S. consumer is alive. You look at the components that are used for GDP, up 1% in the month. And so it's just startling that we're being told that despite inflation, which seems to be accelerating, despite a healthy consumer, full employment, the Federal Reserve is somehow sleeping at the switch. But I think you're right. The market has gotten very aggressive. It's pricing in a rate hike, they're pricing in about 70 basis points off of the current effective Fed funds rate. And more people are beginning to talk about a 50 basis point move once again.
Do you think that's actually going to happen? Do you think A, we'll either get a 50 basis point move, or B, we will get a rate cut even before the next Fed meeting?
I think, one of the leading doves on the FOMC right now, voting member, is the St. Louis Fed President Bullard. And he was the one who dissented at the June meeting in favor of an immediate rate hike. But he did his best to try to squash the talk of an intra-meeting move, which is really a panic and an emergency. We're not in a panic or emergency situation. And about the need for like a big move, like 50 basis points. He still seemed to be embracing the framework, calling what the Federal Reserve's task is as a mid-course correction, rather than trying to cut rates to beat into the recession.
So then what does that mean for us moving forward? Because the Fed is so far behind what the market is pricing in terms of yields, even with kind of Bullard making his comments, where does the Fed stand and where does that leave investors in your eyes?
Yeah, so I think that with September rate cut, I was thinking that they could hold off that one, but it looks like September they're going to have to do now. But I think this is why really the FOMC minutes next week will really be the key report here in the U.S. We'll hopefully have a little bit more color on how widespread is that idea of just a mid-course correction. How worried was the Federal Reserve about weakening stocks, or how important was the trade tensions? And so I think we'll get a better sense of this with the FOMC minutes. But at the end of the day, I just think the Federal Reserve is painting itself into a tough corner. And I'm just not sure that the market, though, is Do we really need 3 rate cuts? So I think the best thing, I think, for the Fed, then, if we know that the international variables are the most important, I'd be watching what, how the economic data comes out for Germany, and especially the auto sector. That's really what the drag is in Germany. And I'd be watching the Chinese economic data, not because we're rooting for a strong China for itself, but really because it can act as like sucking in the exports of other countries. And we did get a early report from Singapore that made it look like its non-oil exports actually had rose last month. That could be one of the first preliminary signs that maybe Asia might be close to a bottom.
That would be huge if Asia could also reach a bottom. But you know what? So much tinkering from the political sphere also has them playing kind of defense and hard for them to get their footing when you just don't know what's going to happen in the tariff picture and in the trade picture. That was another thing that drove the volatility this week, is the delaying of some tariffs. But quite frankly, there is still this uneasiness in the markets, and we didn't get any clarity on positive trade negotiations. What do you think about trade, where it stands, and how it continues to wreak havoc in at least U.S. equity markets and markets around the world?
Yes, I think in the next, China's always said they will take a countervailing action against this next round of tariffs that the U.S. announced going to affect September 1st. And then they will have to respond again in the middle of December if the U.S. goes forward with the next round of tariffs. But I think that in a big picture, the U.S. and China are still at the very low rungs of the escalation ladder. We're still not doing a lot that hurts the other one. For example, with these latest tariffs that Trump announced, it might shave a 1.5% off of China's GDP over the course of a year. And it might do about half of that in the U.S., the depressant on growth. That's still relatively modest. There's a lot more things, I think, that so I don't think the escalation is done. I think there's a lot more we can do if we really want to hurt each other. For example, China could, what China looks like they might consider is putting a tariff on U.S. energy exports. And that would really be hurt the U.S. is trying to make some foothold into East Asia. A thing that the U.S. could do, it could hold, right now, goods coming from Hong Kong do not count as goods coming from China, even though we all know Hong Kong's part of China. But Hong Kong got this special position, special privilege. The U.S. could threaten to take it away for maybe Chinese actions in Hong Kong or just on general principles. And so there's a Taiwanese election coming up early next year. There's a lot of ways we could hurt each other. And we're still refraining from doing it for the most part.
Yeah, we are trying to do that, but you know what? It still is just wreaking havoc in the markets. One other thing that China is dealing with is these tensions in Hong Kong. The airport was shut down for a couple days. These protests just keep on going. What do you think about how this is also impacting China, its ability to keep its footing in its economic policy, but then also fighting the trade war? They're fighting multiple battles right now.
Yeah, and Hong Kong had reported their GDP, revised their GDP, they're showing contraction. They cut this whole year's growth forecast, as well as offering a relatively modest fiscal stimulus. That's just from Hong Kong. I think China's in a tough position. You know, I don't really think that they want to crack down bringing the People's Liberation Army, or the garrison they have, putting it in operation. But I think that their tolerance is running thin. But I think that we might see that the protesters are going to have a new tactic, and that is what they're going to try to do is have another type of civil disobedience disruption. Take cash from the ATMs. Take your cash out of the banks. And I think that as they do these things, it escalates into being not just social chaos, interrupts short-term businesses and people getting to work and that kind of thing. But as it grows, it just adds the pressure. But there's a lot of balls in the air here. First, I'd say, is they're trying to win the hearts and minds, not just in Hong Kong, but Taiwan. Taiwan has an election coming up, like I mentioned. And if China comes down hard on Hong Kong, will that sway the Taiwanese election? I think that you have October 1st is the 70th anniversary of the Chinese Revolution. They don't want to mar it with this kind of like the press that they got at the Tiananmen Square. I think they don't know how the U.S. would respond. And they don't. I mean, I think they don't want to kill the goose that lays the golden egg. In many ways, the way that China companies have been able to raise capital is through the Hong Kong as an intermediary, if you will, between like Western capital or global savings and China, the mainland. And even though Shanghai has been coming up as a financial center and all that, I don't think they're really ready to kill Hong Kong. And if they come down too hard, I think people will give up on the future of Hong Kong, and you'll see a brain drain from Hong Kong. Money. That means property prices could fall if people really turn their attitude. And I think China knows this and is trying to tread carefully.
Yeah, tough position that China's in, especially with this whole trade tension, too, with the U.S. Let's also look ahead to next week. You already mentioned the FOMC minutes that will be released, but we have some stuff going on in Europe, too, the ECB and Italian elections. What are you going to be watching closely with these two events?
Yeah, so in Europe, the ECB minutes will give us some clue of what kind of package they're thinking about for September. And so the ECB, we know that they've already hinted that they're going to do something. It could be many steps, including deeper negative interest rate, deposit rate. They could try to tear that a little bit, so not to punish, not to have it. A big negative on everything. They could also tweak the called the targeted long-term refinancing operation. And so there's different steps that they could do. They could begin QE again. And so look at the minutes to see, look at the record from the ECB meeting to get some more like color on what they might do. But at the end of the week, maybe it's next Thursday, the Europeans will report the flash PMIs. And these are an important sentiment indicator, purchasing managers' indexes. It's supposed to be a good like lead indicator in the state of the economy. And what we've seen this year, as you know, is the manufacturing sector has really deteriorated. But the service sector has held up. But most recently, we've seen some weakness in the German service sector. And if that spills over, that tells us that the ECB is going to have to do something more aggressive, maybe more of a shock and awe to get ahead of expectations on this. And the other thing, as you mentioned, Italy's politics, you know, many people thought that it was Italy's finances with the bad loans, confrontation with the EU over budget was going to be the big spark. But instead, the right candidate in the government, Salvini, who heads up the League, he withdrew support from the government last week, trying to force a confidence vote, collapse of the government, and elections in which he thinks that his party, according to some polls, is getting close to 40%. And if he can get that, and something close to that even, he could get some extra seats in the way that they do these elections, and that could give him standalone majority. And this would give, this is of course what the ambitious politician wants. And so this is going to play out probably next Tuesday and Wednesday, how this plays out in Italy. I do think they're going to have elections. It's a question of, do they have to have elections now, or can they have a vote of no, and this is the same thing that could happen in the UK, a vote of confidence that the government fails. But instead of having the current government stand in place until you have elections, could, in the UK's case, can some other party besides, or some other person besides Boris Johnson head up this transition government before you have elections? And in Italy, it's really a case of, can, if they have a vote of no confidence and the current government collapses, could Parliament cobble together another majority government, even if it had a limited agenda, to maybe pass the 2020 budget and maybe have some political reforms? What they're trying to do, and this could be voted on next week if the government doesn't collapse, is they want to reduce the number of deputies. It's like reducing the number of the House of Representatives or the House of Commons, the lower chamber. There's been a motion by the Five Star Movement that's going to be voted on next week, as long as the government doesn't collapse, to reduce the number of deputies.
Okay, so a lot to take in there, but you know what? Still some drivers that we could see for next week. Overall, though, a lot of people are going to be watching very closely what those FOMC minutes are, and again, just continuing to watch these markets. Mark, great having you on the show. Thanks for taking time on this Friday. I hope you have a great weekend.
Thanks, you too. Good luck.